wellnesscouch.com, streaming wellness into your lives.
You're listening to The Wellness Family with psychologist, parenting author, and mother of two, Jody Benvenist.
Welcome to the Wellness Family Podcast Show. This show is for parents who want to create an emotionally rich and rewarding family life. I'm Jody Benvenist, a psychologist, parenting author, and the director of ParentWellbeing.com. And today, our very special guest is Caroline Adams Miller. Caroline is a coach, an author, a teacher, a speaker, and a media personality. She holds a master's in applied positive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania, and she's also an accredited coach through the International Coach Federation. She's an expert in personal change and accomplishing new goals, and her work is based on the latest research and proven results. She's been described as the best goal guru in the world, and she's also the author of Creating Your Best Life, the Ultimate Life List Guide. You can find her online at carolinemiller.com. Welcome, Caroline.
Wow, thank you for having me. What a nice intro.
Oh, good. You deserve it. I love your work. And I'm really pleased to have you here on the show today. What I'd love to talk to you about is you do focus a lot of your work on goal setting and achieving your goals and creating and having a sense of purpose and direction. And maybe we will start there. Where did your interest in goal setting come from?
Oh, it's a good question. I come from a family of fairly high achievement, and we're also very athletic. My great uncles, Platt and Ben Adams, won gold and silver medals in the 1912 Olympics, and the bar was set very high in our family because there was this kind of verbal lore and personal standard of, you know, excellence. And I took a slight detour in my life. I was a good student. I had a lot of, you know, things going for me that, you know, are the kinds of things you want going for you: private school, good grades, swimming champion, all the rest of it. But I had an eating disorder called bulimia, which I know is very, you know, prominent in many countries, or prevalent, I should say, including Australia. But it nearly took my life. And really what it... I recovered, and I wrote the first book by a survivor called My Name is Caroline, which came out in 1988. And so when I coupled together kind of this search for excellence and goal setting and sports psychology and how do you become the best and train to be the best, when I combined it with going off on the dark side, really, of trying to be the best in a physical way, which, I lost my way with my eating disorder, and then basically saved my own life because no one knew how to treat people like me 20, 30 years ago. I became very interested in how do you set the right goals and how do you then pursue and accomplish the goals that bring you, you know, fulfillment and joy and contentment and happiness. Because one of the hallmarks of my eating disorder career was that I had all the wrong goals, which I write about in Creating Your Best Life. You know, kind of the extrinsic goals, the goals other people set for me, good grades, good scores, look right, look the best you can. Kind of this superficial approach to life, but it got rewarded where I live, Washington, D.C. That's what gets you where you need to go. And I got to Harvard, and I literally bottomed out. It's like this is what I was striving for, because I was as empty inside at that point as I'd ever been. So I became fascinated by goal setting the right goals. How do you hang in there? How do you pursue things that change your life, transform your life? And then what is happiness? Truly, how do you find happiness from those goals? So long story there, but that's, you know, you can draw a straight line from my first book in 1988 to my sixth book, which is out today, actually.
Oh, great.
I just got word it's listed on Amazon, Positively Caroline. But that's also a book that involves my parenting, not just the parenting I did, but also the parenting that I received and the things that I wish had been different in both cases.
Okay, so let's talk about a little bit about parenting and happiness and goal setting. And do you want to start with some reflection on how you were parented before you go on to your own parenting? Because that might be interesting.
You know, my book is going to be a little controversial because I wasn't really ready to out myself as someone who grew up in a highly dysfunctional home in my first book. My name is Caroline. But as I got into recovery and stayed in recovery and got some fantastic therapy, you know, I've really done my best to follow the path of trying to be the best I can be, not so much change other people. I began to own the fact that the house had been had been somewhat violent, not very supportive, but also kind of pursuing all the wrong goals, like I said. And I have a mother who has borderline personality disorder. So the parenting I received was not the kind of parenting I ever wanted to repeat. So I kind of took that lesson and began to apply different kinds of things to my children and how I brought them up. But in the course of writing, Creating Your Best Life, and going through into the field of positive psychology, a few lessons were really reinforced that I wish I'd done more of. I have three children. They're 24, 20, and 18. And they're very different children. Two of them are Division I athletes in the United States colleges, swimming and rowing. My third child just won the top academic award in the country, which is all very nice and wonderful. It's called the Presidential Scholar Award, but he's also a recovering alcoholic. Mm. So we've had to face some tough challenges that required that I do things in a very focused, present way without flinching or looking away. And I think my parents deflected from really facing what was going on, which is probably why my eating disorder went on for so many years unchecked, is nobody really cared to look for what was going on. And so we chose to face things differently in my family, which included kind of getting our arms around the family history of addiction and alcoholism. And our 18-year-old just happened to inherit it from both sides. And I think the hallmark of our parenting, my husband's and mine, has been to embrace each child where they are. We have one son who's got ADHD, that's the oldest, as well as I do. My parents took that diagnosis and hid it from me and never dealt with it. So consequently, I went into my teen years kind of spiraling out of control from hyperactivity. And anyway, so we've really addressed some hard issues, but that's what parents do, is you face things and you also role model things like self-regulation. And you role model not being a quitter. One thing I just see in American parenting, and I saw it as recently as today, is just there's a lot of embracing of trying to be your child's friend as opposed to being their parent. And I do think you have to set goals, or your children have to set goals that are authentic and intrinsic to them, but you have to hold them accountable to follow through. And that does include not quitting. But children who see their parents quit, I don't think we'll ever learn that lesson in an authentic way. So that's a long answer to a short question. I can go off in any angle you want from that.
Well, let's talk about self-regulation, because I do believe, like you, that it is such an important skill. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about why you think it's important, and then how we can actually teach our children about self-regulation.
Okay, so chapter 6 in Creating Your Best Life, I put it there on purpose after I described how to set goals and how to, you know, the accountability. I put the chapter on self-regulation there because from what I read and what I researched, this is the number one thing to focus on with your children. You have to get this down, or it doesn't really matter what kinds of goals you set and how good they are and all the rest of it. You really have to have the ability to say no to yourself. And so Walter Mischel's research back in the 1960s at Stanford University found this very interesting, you know, finding, I guess is the best way to say it, where these children who were asked to wait 15 minutes while they were given one marshmallow, and could they wait 15 minutes to be given a second marshmallow? I believe, and I hope they get these statistics correctly, that about 60% of the children were able to say no to the marshmallow, and they waited. So they had this delayed gratification impulse down, even as preschoolers. The other 40% gobbled up the marshmallow, poked it, sniffed it, did whatever, finally just ate it, ended the test. So 15 years later, Michelle and his colleagues went back and they found that those children at the age of 4 who'd been able to say no to themselves and been able to kind of delay gratification had this astounding array of benefits that really kind of dictated how their life was going. They had more friends, they had higher grades, higher test scores, they had fewer addictions, if any, they had, you know, better peer relationships, better relationships with adults. And so they had really set themselves up to be more popular, more successful, and more dedicated to pursuing the things that mattered. On the contrary, people who have low self-regulation and people who, you know, really can't allow themselves to be uncomfortable in the pursuit of a goal, you know, what you find is that these are the people who quit almost immediately the minute something's uncomfortable. They tend to have, you know, more eating disorders, more alcoholism, more divorces. They're, you know, poor peer relationships. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but the findings are so astounding. They've been replicated in other labs that, you know, if I could go back and just make sure I did that as well as I could, things like, you know, if you're on the phone with somebody and a child comes up and wants your attention, you don't just kind of divert your attention and start talking to the child. It's not appropriate. They do need to learn to wait for something as small as that. And so I just think there's so much research out there on why delayed gratification makes for a better life, short term and long term, that you really have to get that down early in parenting. But again, not to just, you know, focus on the kids. What about the parents? Because when I was getting a black belt in Hapkido, my daughter and I were in the martial arts for 5 years. I remember watching all these kids quitting at red belt level and wondering why. And I just found that if, you know, and that's a goal that involves grit, because you have to hang in there, not just physically, but emotionally. It gets very hard emotionally. But I saw adults quitting in my adult class, and right behind them, these kids quit. So I think there's a lesson there that needs to be learned, that if you sign up for something like a black belt program, you stay there until you're a black belt. So you begin to learn very early in a variety of settings that it's okay to just walk out when it gets hard. And I don't think that's good. And I think sometimes it just starts at the top with what the parents are doing in their own lives.
I think you point to a couple of really important ideas there. One of them is that, you know, self-regulation is so important for persisting and for being resilient and achieving things, for actually being able to create something that's meaningful does take that effort and persistence. But the other thing you talk about is the importance of role models. And as parents, we are such powerful role models for our children. Can you talk a little bit more about how you think role models work in parenting and also in achieving what we want to in life?
Oh boy. Okay. So that's another great topic. So role modeling, I'm sure you know as well as I do, this big topic, self-efficacy, and Albert Bandura's work on just, you know, people who have self-efficacy, meaning they believe they can kind of do whatever it is they need to do. If they set a goal, they may not know how to do it, but they'll find a way. They'll find a book or a YouTube video or something. Those people have high self-efficacy. And there are four ways to build it. And one of those four is to have role models. You can't overstate the importance of having a target you can see. Because when you can, you know, see someone who's achieved what you want to achieve, or see someone who role models a quality, a character quality or value that you want to have, it really does flatten your learning curve. And so I've studied a lot of elite athletes, and they all have role models. Every one of them points to someone who's like 5 seconds faster than them. And they go, I'm going to do what that person does, because I need to get to, you know, that place in my training. And it's, you know, you hear this all the time about Roger Bannister breaking the 4 minute mile mark. The minute he did it, after everyone talking about it for decades, I think 20 or 30 people broke it in the following year. You know, it takes one person to role model that something's possible, and off they go. I do know from my own eating disorder recovery, I date my recovery from the night I was sitting in a self-help group for compulsive eaters, and a woman across the room said, my name is Betsy, and I'm recovering from bulimia one day at a time. And I just remember just being shocked, thinking, first of all, I didn't know anybody got better. Secondly, I've never heard anybody talk honestly about it. So in that moment, she became my role model, and she represented everything that was missing in my life, most importantly, hope. And so role models give us hope, and they give us hope that we too can get somewhere. And when it comes to parenting, one of the things I've found, and I included some of this research in Creating Your Best Life, is that the happiest families do tell stories of overcoming quite often, about parents overcoming things, about extended, you know, relatives overcoming things. Because when you do this, children grow up knowing that, you know, there are people out there who can be consulted to overcome a variety of things. It, again, it gives people a sense of hope and safety. And I think with children in particular, one of the things I have found is that, and I'm going to get personal here, is I stopped drinking 30 years ago myself. And so my son, when we, you know, found that he was dealing with the exact same disease, he looked at me and he looked at other people in the family who had started recovering very young, and he knew he too could make it. And we didn't even have to say anything. It was the silent role modeling for years, if not decades, that had created the awareness that people get better and stay better. It's not a hopeless condition. And I think I could basically say that for pretty much anything else that you do. When I wrote Creating Your Best Life, I was given 3 months to write it. Barnes & Noble published it. And I remember they said to me, you have 3 months to write this book. And if you write it within that period of time, we will make it our lead book for, you know, early 2009 for New Year's resolutions. And unfortunately, my co-author was unable to, you know, fulfill his part of it. So I had to step in and write the whole thing. And I had to move away from my family at one point, which was really tough for me because I'd been a very hands-on working mother. I'd never been away that much. And I literally moved out of the house to write for 18 hours a day. And my children were, you know, not happy that their father was boiling tomato paste for dinner some nights and things like that, because that's what I heard about is, you know, there's no food in the house, Mom. But what they have told me since then is that I role modeled for them going after a dream, because I went after this dream and I was willing to do almost anything to make grab this brass ring. It was a once in a lifetime opportunity and I knew it. And we can give our kids all the speeches in the world, but until they see us doing things like hard things, having goals. I mean, one of the reasons why women have bottomed out by the age of 48 in most cultures is because they have let their own goals drop to the bottom of the priority list. So consequently, their children don't always grow up seeing that their mothers, they have visions too. They have, you know, they have dreams for themselves and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get there within reason. I had a very interesting call with a client after I turned the book in. So I got it done in about 4 months, four and a half, but I got it done and it was extraordinary. But I had to close my practice down, my coaching practice. And I let all my clients know that I was going to be basically talking to nobody for months and that I'd be back. Not to worry. And with the exception of one person, every other coach or professional I know told me I was crazy, that it was a referral only business. It takes a long time to build a business. You're never going to get your clientele back. So I thought that was interesting, but you know what? I'm going to do this anyway. This is my choice. And I feel like I have no choice. I need to do this. So I come back and write an email to all my former clients. And I say, you know, I'm back and I'm ready to start coaching again. And I was kind of prepared to have nobody come back to me. They'd all found other great coaches because there's so many great coaches. But instead, what I got was not just everybody, but more people. So I was wondering about this. And one day a client said, you know, Caroline, we hear a lot of talk and advice and even coaching advice about, you know, take risks and go after your dreams. And she said, I'd heard all those stories and I'd heard that advice, but until you shut your practice down and went for it, I'd never actually seen anyone do it. And in that moment, I realized I'd been a role model without even intending to be a role model. And that was a powerful lesson for me, is people are always watching what you do.
That is, so you have, yeah. Sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say that's such a wonderful example, and so relevant to us as parents too, because we talk about, we are, even if we aren't aware of it, we are, as you say, unintentional role models, and our kids are watching the choices we make and the things we do and the way we deal with stuff. And sometimes as parents, we can try to smooth things out for our kids, can't we? I know there are many parents who don't like to see their kids struggling or unhappy or in distress, but what we're actually not doing them a great service by doing that, are we?
No, and this is some of the findings that are kind of new again about post-traumatic growth that I'm just so passionate about. I've seen the research, I've read some of the more recent research, and that is that we really need to have about 5 to 7 extremely significant setbacks in our lives in order to truly have high quality of life. And that's because you shouldn't be saved from all of your mistakes or everything that rocks your world, because that's when you find out what you're made of. And that's when you find out, you challenge your values in times like that. You kind of question, what can I learn from this? And so some of the research has found that having too few setbacks, where you've literally been saved from feeling any pain, is as damaging to a child as it is to have too many, where you basically become broken. So I think that's very interesting. And I live in an area still, Washington, D.C., where I just see a lot of saving going on. Kids who, you know, get alcohol citations or whatever, and their parents pay lawyers to make it all go away, or parents do their children's homework for them. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of that. And I guess the holy grail is to get into the right school at some point, but you aren't doing your kids any favors. And, you know, there was a wonderful article, I think at one point in the New York Times, it was the most emailed article last fall. And it was the front of the magazine section. I'm pretty sure it's still available for anyone who just goes to the New York Times archives. But the article is called, "What If the Secret to Success is Failure?" And it's very provocative, but it makes you really kind of see and think about the differences between children who grow up in very privileged environments who never really feel failure. They're not allowed to feel failure. There's always someone to come in and fix it and make it better, versus children they were following in the charter school whose parents really didn't have the resources or the time to bail them out. Those kids ended up with higher quality of life and higher well-being and better, I think it was even better grades in college, simply because they had learned resilience. Mm. So, you know, you can't rob your children of the opportunity to find out what they're made of, because it, just speaking for my own 3 children, the things I'm proudest of in their lives is not what they've accomplished, it's what they've overcome. Mm. And that's what has defined all 3 of them. And in each case, I was itching to fix whatever it was that was going on, but they would have learned nothing if we had taken away the pain and the hurt, because that's what allowed them to change. There's this great quote I just ended my next book with, which is, you know, it was only through the cracked window that the sun came in and allowed me to blossom. Where we crack and the sun comes in is where we grow. And we can't take that away from our children. It's not fair to them. And you cripple them for life if they grow up without any resilience.
Yeah, I so agree. And I think this is the interesting thing to me about goal setting. It's not actually necessarily about reaching a particular goal or a particular outcome. It's actually the process, isn't it, of having that vision and that purpose and that sense of direction, and then the process of putting in the effort to try and achieve it and what you learn out of that, and not necessarily about, right, you know, I reached that goal. Would you agree with that?
Oh, gosh, absolutely. I think Ed Diener has said it repeatedly. I've seen him in lots of interviews talking about it. It's having the goals is essential, because happy people do wake up every day to clear-cut short-term and long-term goals. And quite often those goals are hard and out of their comfort zone. But in the pursuit of those goals, again, you find flow, you find fulfillment, you find meaning, you find purpose. And, you know, if the goals are set in the right way, they are aligned with your purpose, or as they say in Japanese, ikigai, that which I wake up for. So what is it that you wake up for every day? And so in the process of pursuing those goals that illuminate your purpose and allow you to connect with others and give, that's where you find joy. And I think sometimes people don't understand that, but it is worthy of repeating, because it's just so critical.
Mm. So how do you think we can use this in our parenting and to become better parents and to give our kids the best opportunities?
Well, I think one thing, I think children need to be taught the basics of goal setting. If I hadn't been a competitive athlete, I wouldn't have understood short-term and long-term goals and delayed gratification and hard training and the discipline of just showing up every day, whether you see results immediately or not. So I find, particularly in my coaching practice, if people have learned that kind of behavior, either through pursuing an instrument or art or something else that they're passionate about, they have to learn it kind of the hard way, quite late in life. But I think all children should be taught the science of goal setting, what's intrinsic, what's extrinsic. You always should be able to answer the so what question. You know, so what? So you set this goal, so what? What happens to your life? What does it mean to you to accomplish that? How are you a better person as a result of pursuing that goal? So both short-term and long-term. And I love the best possible self exercise where you ask people to spin into the future and say, where do you want to be in 5 years? Where do you see yourself? Because once you begin to have this vision of yourself in the future, very interesting things do happen. People begin to commit to short-term goals more readily. They also even, it's been found, people save money because they're more in touch with who they're going to become. So I think instead of living in the here and now, we need to challenge our children to think in the future along with, you know, the benefits of, you know, understanding the science of goal setting. I think teaching grit. Now, I think, you know, you can take that grit scale test for free at the Authentic Happiness website. But, you know, grit is this passion and perseverance when you pursue long-term goals. And I think that it's really important that we hold up for our children these role models of people who have been gritty, who've pursued really tough things, and they've fallen down not just once, but sometimes hundreds of times, but they haven't quit. And I find a lot of those stories are in the sports pages of the New York, of the newspapers. Because you see elite athletes with this small window of time in which they can achieve the greatness of whatever it is their talent is. And you see these incredible stories of grit, particularly during the Olympic year. So I think sports, you know, reading about them, you know, reading autobiographies, you can really see a lot of those lessons. And self-regulation, I can't say enough about it. Kids should not be given enough money to just go buy an iPod just because they want an iPod. Where's the learning? where have they actually kind of you know, made something happen of their own effort? And then, of course, there's Carol Dweck's research on don't praise outcome, praise the effort that went into something. You know, so if somebody struggled really hard to get to, say, a B in math, but it represented more of their effort than an A in geography, you need to be cognizant of the fact that it's the effort that allows them to see themselves as doers. And I think a lot of parents, including me, have made that mistake without really intending to. One of the biggest things I learned in writing Creating Your Best Life is you never tell your children to do their best. That's just an incredibly toxic phrase to use with anyone where there's a metric that is known. So a performance goal, like you can basically say, this is what I'm shooting for. Learning goals are different. You're basically learning or immersing yourself in something. And that's when it's permissible to say, do your best, like see how much French you can learn in a month, or see if you can learn how to do income taxes, do your best. But when you say do your best to someone, in this case, a child, for which there is a known metric you could be shooting for, you're basically setting a very mediocre bar. And when you achieve that very mediocre bar, you will feel mediocre too. Mm. And that is a fascinating finding in goal setting theory.
That really, I mean, it's much more complex, isn't it, than we might first think. The whole idea of goal setting and intrinsic and extrinsic and effort and outcome and short and long term and all the other aspects to it. I just wanted to maybe finish up by asking you, you've, through your experience as a coach and your life experience and your study in positive psychology and applying it to your work, how do you think this has impacted on you as a parent? What have you learned about yourself as a parent through all this experience and study?
Boy, okay. So Marty Seligman's book Flourish came out, I think, 2 years ago, and I am actually the parent he references in the chapter on the magic of math. And I'm happy to out myself. Maybe he thought I was embarrassed, but Barbara Fredrickson came and she talked about the positivity ratio in our first week, immersion week, and she talked about, you know, flourishing relationships are over five or over three positive interactions or comments to one negative. And that optimally it's five. And while I was sitting there, I immediately thought, my God, I am nowhere near 3-1 with my oldest child. He's so much like me. We butt heads. We, you know, I'm maybe at 1-1 at best, but the other ones, hey, they're easier to parent. I'm definitely at 5-1 with them. And in that moment, I knew I had a tool to change my relationship with my son. And I did it. And I came home and I very consciously became aware of how I was leading with negative phrases or negative questions as opposed to positives. And that one realization was worth the cost of that program because it changed me as a person. And I think another thing that I started doing differently that did teach my kids something without me intending it was I began to value my relationships with other people. Because one phrase you hear all the time in the world of positive psychology is other people matter. And if you have to boil the science of happiness down to one thing, it's having friendships and working at those friendships. And I realized while I'm sitting at MAP, it's like I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a mom, I'm busy, and my friendships are probably the most neglected part of my life. I need to make sure we make enough money to send them to college. I mean, I could justify it a million ways till Sunday. But then when I'm presented with this research, I was like, you know, my life has to change too. So my kids saw me putting more time and effort and energy around being present for my friends. And as a result of that, I think they too see how important it is to not just focus on their own things, but to always be there for other people. So I didn't intend for that to impact my parenting, but I know it did.
Mm. Fantastic. Carolyn, I feel like we could talk for hours, and I feel like we've only just scratched the surface, but I encourage everyone to check out your books and to check out your site online. And I wanted to thank you so much for being a part of this show and sharing. You know, what I really appreciate about you is you bring yourself to your work and you bring your personal stories, and not, you know, there's that not many professionals do, or not all professionals do that. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. It is an applied degree I have. It's worded that way, a master's in applied positive psychology. So our mission is to apply the research to our own lives. And if I don't share what's happening to me, let alone my clients, I'm not sure how authentic I can be in this field. So it comes naturally, but I appreciate you saying that.
Thank you. Well, that's it for this edition of The Wellness Family. You can give us feedback on our website, thewellnesscouch.com/thewellnessfamily. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes, and also be sure to check out all the other great shows on The Wellness Couch at thewellnesscouch.com. Until next episode, keep well, and thank you for joining us.
This has been a production of thewellnesscouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on facebook.com/thewellnesscouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives.
Hi, Damien Christoph from The Wellness Guys here. The biggest wellness event in Australia is fast approaching, and we want to see you there. The Wellness Summit's coming up, and it's on Saturday, August the 17th at Crown Melbourne, featuring guest speakers David Gillespie, author of Sweet Poison and Big Fat Lies, also holistic dentist Dr. Ron Ehrlich from The Good Doctors, and my Wellness Guys teammates, of course, the Up For A Chat girls, and many more. Tickets are just $147 for this 10-hour event. So go to www.thewellnesssummit.com to book and for more information. See you there.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenter endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.